Relative Difficulties by Melinda M. Snodgrass. Dr. Tachyon bounded down the steps of the Blythe Van Rensselaer Memorial Clinic and paused to pat one of the dispirited sandstone lions that flanked the stairs. He noticed that its companion to the north still had a toupee of dirty snow adorning its crumbling head. Though he was already late for a luncheon date with Senator Hartman at Aces High, he couldn't resist tenderly brushing away the snow. A brisk, cold wind was gusting off the East River, driving tatters of white clouds before it, and carrying the sound of horns from the bumper-to-bumper traffic on the Brooklyn Bridge. The urgency of the horns reminded him of the passing time, and he took the final two steps in a long leap, and was brought up short by an expanse of pink. A waistcoat, Tech identified, before his view was broken by a gladiolus thrust firmly beneath his nose. Tech looked up, and up, and realized he was facing a stranger. And there was danger, or the potential of danger, in every stranger. Three quick steps back carried him out of range of all but a gun or some esoteric ace power, and he warily studied the apparition. The man was very tall, his scrawny height exaggerated by the enormously tall purple stovepipe hat crammed down onto long, lank blonde hair. A coat, also purple, hung from narrow shoulders, and set, to Tack's mind, a lovely contrast to the orange and violet paisley shirt and green trunks. The grinning scarecrow once more proffered the flower.
"Like, I'm Captain Trips, man," he offered,
and stood swaying and beaming like a drunken lighthouse. Fascinated, Tachyon stared up into pale blue eyes swimming behind lenses that looked as if they'd been knocked off the bottom of Coke bottles. Unable to construct anything coherent to say, Tack merely accepted the flower.
"That's not really my name, man,"
the captain confided in a stage whisper that would have carried to the end of Carnegie Hall.
"I'm an ace, so I gotta have a secret identity, you know?"
The captain ran a bony hand across his mouth, smoothing the slightly stained mustache and the scraggly wisp of beard.
"Oh, wow! Like, I can't believe it! Dr. Tachyon in person! Oh, I really admire you, man."
Tack, never one to pass up a compliment, was pleased, but also aware of the passing time. He jammed the flower into his coat pocket and surged back into motion, his newfound companion falling in beside him. There was a good feeling about the man that washed off him with the faint odor of ginseng, sandalwood, and old sweat, but Tack couldn't shake the feeling that the captain was an amiable lunatic. Digging his hand into the pockets of his midnight blue breeches, he cast Trips a sideways glance and decided that he had to say something. He obviously wasn't going to be rid of the man anytime soon.
"So, was there any particular reason for your seeking me out?"
"Well, I think I need advice. Like, you know, it seemed you were the person to ask."
The man's hand sought out the gigantic green bow tie with its yellow polka dots and gave it a hard tug as if he found it confining.
"I'm not really Captain Trips."
"Yes, I know, you said that," replied Tack, clinging to his now fast-vanishing patience.
"I'm really Mark Meadows, Dr. Mark Meadows. Like, we have a lot in common, man."
"You can't be serious," blurted Tack, and instantly regretted his rudeness. The gawky figure seemed to pull in on itself, losing inches.
"I am, man, really."
10 years ago, Mark Meadows had been considered the most brilliant biochemist in the world, the Einstein of his field. There had been a dozen different explanations for his sudden retirement: stress, personality deterioration, the breakup of his marriage, drug abuse. But to think that young giant had been reduced to this shambling...
"I've been, like, looking for the radical, man."
Memory snapped down. 1970? The riot in People's Park, when a mysterious ace had appeared on the scene, rescued the Lizard King, and vanished, never to be seen again.
"You're not the only one. I tried to locate him in 70, but he never reappeared."
"Yeah, that's a real bummer,"
the captain concurred mournfully.
"I had him once. Well, I think I had him once, but I haven't been able to get him back, so maybe I didn't. Maybe it's just, like, wishful thinking, man."
"You're claiming to be the radical?"
Disbelief sent Tack's voice up several octaves.
Oh, no, man, 'cause I got no proof. I made these powders trying to find him and to get him back. But when I eat him, I get these other people.
Other people? Tack repeated in an unnaturally calm tone.
Yeah, my friends, man.
Tachyon was certain now. He had a nut on his hands. If only he had sent for the limousine. He began casting about for a way to dump his unwelcome companion and get to his meeting before they canceled his grant, or the ideal only knew what else. He spotted an alley that he knew would cut through to a taxi stand. Surely there he could be rid. Fripps was rambling again.
You're sort of like the father to all aces, man, and you're always doing stuff to help people. And I'd like to help people, so I was figuring you could, like, teach me to be an ace and fight evil and...
Whatever else the captain wanted was lost in a squeal of tires as a car shot into the alley and jammed to a halt. Survival instincts, drilled into him from infancy, took over, and Tack whirled and ran from what had now become a deadly box. Fripps turned from side to side, his head poking at the car and at the fleeing Takesian like a puzzled stork. Screech! Slam! Another car, effectively blocking his escape. And figures. Familiar figures, boiling from the vehicles. He had no time to ponder the inexplicable presence of his relatives on Earth. Instead, his shield snapped into place just in time to turn a powerful mind blast. His power lanced out, shields buckled, fell, and one of his attackers collapsed. He tried another. The shields held. Too many. Time to try and elude them physically. The leak from their minds indicated a simple capture, but then he saw an arrestor slide from his cousin Rabdan's wrist sheath. It was a particularly nasty weapon and a popular assassination tool. A press to the victim's chest, and the heart stopped. Quick, clean, simple, and the job was finished. A spinning back kick sent Rabdan staggering into a row of garbage cans. The battered cans went down with a crash and a clatter, releasing the stench of rotting garbage and four or five yowling, spitting alley cats. The silvery disc of the arrestor rolled from Rabdan's hand, and Tack leaped for it. From the corner of his eye, he saw the captain clutch at his head and collapse with a moan to the slimy pavement. Another mental attack that his shields turned, but they did fuck all against a baton expertly wielded by Sedger, his old arms master. And as his skull exploded in fragments of light and pain, Tachyon felt a deep sense of hurt and betrayal, and a strong wish that he had a gun.
Bring this other one.
He said to leave neither witnesses nor bodies.
Rabdan's sulky, defensive tones seemed filtered by several miles of cotton wool. And that other voice, it couldn't be. Tack squeezed his eyes tighter shut, willing the return of unconsciousness, anything but the presence of Kibar, Benafsaj. The old woman sighed.
Very well. Perhaps he can serve as a control. Take him to the cabin with the others.
Rabdan's footfalls receded, accompanied by a dragging sound.
The boy did well,
Sedger said, once Rabdan was gone and could not be insulted by his remarks.
His years here have strengthened him. Took out Rabdan.
Yes, yes, now go. I must speak with my grandchild.
Sedger's footsteps dwindled, and Tack continued to play possum. His mind lanced out, touched on the presence of the ship. It was definitely a war vessel of the Corsair class. Felt the familiar pattern of Takesian minds, the panic of two, no, three human ones, and finally a mind whose touch brought a rush of fear and hate and regret tinged with sadness. His cousin Zab, becoming aware of the feather-like probe thrust back, and Tachyon's imperfect shield allowed part of the blow to pass. His headache increased in intensity.
I know you're conscious,
Benafsaj said conversationally. With a sigh, he opened his eyes and regarded the chiseled features of his oldest living relative. The opaline luminescence of the ship's walls formed a halo about her silver-white hair and heightened the network of lines that etched her face. But even with these ravages, it was possible to see traces of the formidable beauty that had enthralled several generations of men. Legend had it that a member of the Allah family had risked all to spend one night with her. One wondered if he had found the bliss worth the price, for she had killed him before morning.
or so the story ran. A gnarled hand plucked at a wisp of hair that had worked free from the elaborate coiffure, while the faded gray eyes studied him with a coolness bordering on disinterest.
"Will you greet me properly, or have your years on earth dulled your manners?"
He scrambled up, swept her a bow, and dropped to one knee before her. Her long, dry fingers caged his face, drawing him close, and the withered lips pressed a kiss onto his forehead.
"You weren't always so silent. At home your chattering was held to be a flaw."
He remained quiet, not wanting to lose position by asking the first question.
"Sedger says you've learned to fight. Has Earth also taught you to keep your own counsel?"
"Rabdan tried to kill me."
She was neither disconcerted by the bluntness of the statement, nor insulted by his flat, hostile tone.
"Not everyone would welcome your return to Takis."
"And Zab is on board."
"And from that you may draw your own conclusions."
"I see."
He looked away, revulsion lying like a foul taste on the back of his tongue. "I'm not going back, and neither are the humans." Her thin fingers closed like talons on his chin and forced him to face her.
"You sulky-faced boy. What about your duty and responsibility to the family?"
"And what about my pursuit of virtue?"
he countered, throwing up to her the other equally important and utterly contradictory tenet of Takisian life.
"Time has not stood still at home while you have amused yourself on Earth. When you vanished, Shaklan suspected you had followed the ship to Earth. But you were not alone in your concern over the great experiment. Others watched, but rather than herring off to prevent the release, they struck at the source. Leguora, that motherless animal, welded a coalition of 15 other families, and they came."
She stared down at her hands, and suddenly she looked very old.
"Many died in the attack. But for Zab, I think we all might have died."
Tak caught his lower lip between his teeth, holding back the excuses for his absence.
"Did you never wonder, as the years passed and still we did not come, what might have happened?"
A cold blade seemed to twist in his belly, and he forced out,
"Father?"
"A head injury. The flesh lives, but the mind is gone."
Numbness gripped him, and the remainder of her words seemed to come to him from a great distance.
"With you gone, Zab agitated for the scepter, but many feared his ambition. In order to block his ascension, your uncle Taj maintained a regency. But it was decided that you had to be found, for it is doubtful how much longer Shaklan's body can continue."
Bitterly cold mornings, and his father pressing a paper cone filled with roasted nuts into his hand, while a street vendor bobbed and beamed at the noble ones, swinging sadly on a door while Shaklan conducted business and forgot that he had promised to teach his small son to ride that day, the meeting ending and the arms opening wide, racing into that embrace, feeling safe as those powerful arms closed about him, the tickle of a lace cravat against his cheek, and the warm man scent overlaid with the spice of his cologne. The indescribable pain when his father had shot him through the upper thigh during one of his Psi training sessions. Their tears had mingled as Shaklan tried to explain why he had done it. That Tizian had to be able to withstand anything this side of death without losing mental control. Someday his life might depend upon it. The flicker of firelight on the etched planes of his face as they shared a bottle of wine and wept the night they learned of Jadlan's suicide. Tak covered his face with his hands and sobbed. Benafsaj made no move, physical or mental, to ease his anguish, and he hated her. The storm wore itself out, and he mopped at his running eyes and nose with a handkerchief supplied by his many times great-grandam. Their eyes met, and he saw in them pain. He could scarcely credit it, and the moment passed before he could assure himself of the reality of what he had seen.
"We will be underway as soon as we have swept the area for swarmlings. We are not well enough armed to fight off an attack by one of the devourers, and our screens must be dropped before we can enter ghost flight. It is a shame,"
she continued to muse,
that we were able to save so few specimens. It is likely that Zandran will destroy this world.
His head moved in quick negation.
You disagree?
I think the humans might surprise you.
I doubt it. But at least we have gathered our data.
She pinned him with a cold gray eye.
You will, of course, have the run of the ship. But please do not approach the humans. It will only agitate them and make it harder for them to adjust to their new lives.
She gave a telepathic summons, and a slender woman entered the room. Tak realized with a start that the last time he had seen her, she had been a roly-poly 5-year-old, nursing a fine family of dolls, and making him promise to marry her when she grew up so they could have pretty babies. She would never marry now. The fact that she was on this ship and not safely ensconced in the women's quarters meant that she was Bitshufti, one of the neutered ones who had been deemed to carry dangerous recessives or to be of insufficient genetic worth to be permitted to breed. Her eyes flicked. Sadly, it was difficult to gauge the emotion, so quickly had it passed. Over him, and she made obeisance.
Sire, if you will accompany me.
He swept Banafsaj a final bow and fell into step with Tali, debating how to break the silence. He decided small talk would be inappropriate. Of course she'd grown, it'd been decades.
A word of greeting, Tali.
The corridor curved before them, gleaming like polished mother-of-pearl as they spiraled deeper into the heart of the ship.
You gave none in farewell.
It was something I had to do.
Others also live by that imperative.
She glanced nervously about and switched to the tight, intimate telepathic mode.
Zap means to have you dead. Eat or drink nothing that I have not brought, and watch your back.
She pressed a small sharp dagger into his hand, and he ran it quickly up his sleeve. I suspected as much, but thank you for the warning and the weapon.
He'll kill me if he suspects.
He won't learn it from me. He was never my equal in mentatics. But she looked doubtful, and he realized with embarrassment how lax were his shields. He strengthened them, and she nodded with relief.
Better.
No, terrible. This is a dreadful situation. He looked at her seriously. I have no intention of returning to Takis. They had reached the door to the cabin, and the ship obligingly shuttered open for him. She placed her hands on his shoulders and urged him in.
You must. We need you.
And as the door lensed shut, he decided that maybe she wasn't much of an ally after all. Tom Tudbury was having one of the worst days of his life. The very worst day had been March 8th, when Barbara had married Steve Bruder, but this one was running a real close second. He had been on his way to Tachyon's clinic with the strange device he'd taken off the street punk when a strange ship, looking rather like a Wentel Trap seashell, had looped out of the clouds, pulled up beside him, and invited him aboard. Maybe invited wasn't the right word. Compelled was closer to the mark. Icy talons seemed to settle about his mind, and he had calmly flown the shell through the yawning doors of a cargo bay. He didn't remember anything more until he had found himself standing in a gigantic room, his shell squatting behind him. Several slender men in comic opera gold and white uniforms stepped forward and searched him, while another darted into the shell and emerged with the strange black ball and a half-drunk six-pack of beer. He gestured with the cans, causing them to clunk dully together, and there was a burst of laughter. Next, the device was examined amid a ripple of musical words filled with random and inexplicable pauses. With a shrug, the device was placed on a shelf that ran along one side of the curving room. One of his captors gestured politely toward a doorway. The courtesy of the gesture removed his worst fear. He clearly wasn't in the hands of the swarm. Somehow politeness seemed out of place with monsters. They exited into a long snaking corridor whose walls, floor, and ceiling shone like polished abalone. As they proceeded, the arching ceiling would light before them and darken after they had passed. One wall held a tracery of rose-colored lines like the petals of a flower. This section suddenly shuttered open, and Tom was urged into a luxurious cabin. A burst of brittle, feminine laughter met his arrival, and he goggled at the beautiful woman curled up in the center of a large round bed.
Well,
You don't look like much, she said, her eyes raking over him. He sucked in his belly and wished his t-shirt was cleaner.
I'm Asta Lenzer. Who the hell are you?
He was scared, but the fear made him cautious. He shook his head.
Oh, fuck you. We're in this together.
I'm an ace. I've got to be careful.
Well, big fucking deal. So am I.
You are?
Yeah. I do the dance of the seven veils.
Her long, graceful arms wove a pattern about her.
I out Salome, Salome.
He looked puzzled.
Don't you ever go to the ballet?
No.
Moron.
She scrabbled in a large, shapeless bag and emerged with a packet of white powder, a mirror, and a straw. Her hands were trembling so much that it took her 5 tries to get the line set. She sucked in the cocaine and leaned back with a long sigh of relief.
Ah. Oh. Where were we? Oh, yeah, my power. I can mesmerize people with my dancing, particularly men. But it's a real dinky power when you've been kidnapped by aliens. Still, himself sure appreciated it. I got him a lot of good information with my dinky power and kept him up.
She made an obscene gesture between her legs. Tom wondered who and what the hell she was talking about, but he frankly didn't care to puzzle it out. He staggered across the room and collapsed on a low bench that seemed to be an extrusion of the ship itself. As he seated himself on the thick, embroidered cushion, there was a crackle of leaves or dried petals, and a rich, spicy aroma filled the air. He wasn't sure how long he huddled on the bench, agonizing over his situation. Tekesians! Jesus Christ! What was going to happen to them? Tack? Could he help? Did he even know? Oh, shit.
Hey, called Asta. I'm sorry. Look, we're both aces. We ought to be able to do something to get out of this mess.
Tom just shook his head. How could he tell her that he had left his powers behind with his shell? The rasp of the match was loud in the silent room. Tack watched with unnecessary attention as the candle flared to life. The light struck color from the ship wall and shed the gentle scent of flowers. Pulling a quarter from his pocket, he laid it on the altar. It looked incongruous among the gold Tekesian coins. He hefted the tiny pearl-handled knife, murmured a quick prayer for the release of his father's spirit, and made a tiny cut on the pad of his forefinger. The blood welled slowly out, and he touched the gleaming drop to the coin. He sank down to sit cross-legged before the family altar, sucking at his cut finger, and flipping the tiny 2-inch knife over and over in his hand.
It won't make much of a weapon.
Zab was leaning against the door, arms folded across his chest. He was close to 6 feet tall with a whip-lean body and the heavy chest and shoulders of the long-distance swimmer or martial artist. Wavy silver gilt hair swept back from a high white forehead and just brushed the collar of his white and gold tunic. Cold gray eyes added to the impression of metal and crystal. There was no warmth to the man. But there was power and command, and an overwhelming charisma.
That wasn't what I was thinking about. You should be.
There was something in the moment, the set of Zab's shoulders, or perhaps the indulgent cock to his head, that made Tack remember an earlier time, before family politics had intruded, before he understood the whispers linking Zab's mother to the death of his mother, before. A time when a 5-year-old Tack had adored his glamorous older cousin.
I was remembering that you gave me my first puppy, from that litter old Zushula had. Don't, Tiz. That's dead and past.
Like I'm going to be? Their eyes met, gray to lilac. Tack's fell first.
Yes.
One fine manicured hand was brushing nervously at his full mustache and sideburns.
I intend to kill you before we reach Takis.
Zab's tone was conversational.
I don't want the family. I want to stay on Earth. That doesn't matter. As long as you live, I can't have it.
And the humans?
They're laboratory animals. Useful if we're to move to the second stage.
He turned to leave.
Zab, what happened?
His cousin's shoulders hunched, then relaxed back into their military erectness.
You lived to maturity.
the door whispered closed behind him. Tom and Asta started as the two men entered, dragging between them a sprawling, gangling form in a purple Uncle Sam suit. The younger man dropped to one knee, riffled quickly through the hippie's voluminous coat pockets, and pulled out a small vial filled with a silver-shot blue powder. The elder accepted the bottle, uncapped it, and sniffed curiously at the contents. One eyebrow quirked up.
"This one was with Tizzy Ann," he said in English.
"Yes, Rabdan."
"And they seemed friendly."
His pale eyes shot to Tom.
"Yes."
"This is a drug of some sort, and too much of a drug can cause terrible effects. I certainly hope my esteemed cousin is conversant with the treatment of an overdose, otherwise his friend might die."
Another secret, cat-like glance to Tom. His companion's fingers pressed quickly at his lips, then he hesitantly said,
"Shouldn't we ask Zeb?"
"Nonsense. He won't care what happens to a human friend of Tizzy Ann's."
Kneeling, he poured the contents of the vial between the hippie's slack lips. Tom half rose, a protest on his lips, but a look from Rabdan dropped him back onto the bench. Everyone's eyes fastened on the scraggy figure on the floor, Asta with excitement, the tip of her tongue just showing between her lips, Tom with horror, the young Takesian with worry, and Rabdan with jovial good humor. The man writhed, shifted, and for an instant everyone gaped as a blue glowing figure rose majestically from the floor. Within his cowled cloak of deep space darkness, his eyes were slits of white fire, and the lining of the cloak glittered with glowing stars, nebulas, galactic whirls. The Takesians leaped forward, clutching at air, as the exotic form sank quickly and cleanly through the floor. Tachyon returned to his cabin and sprawled on his belly on the bed, chin propped in his hands, and tried to decide what to do. His brief conversation with Zab had indicated not only his danger, but the danger to the humans. It was clear they were to be experimental guinea pigs, Benafsaj's remarks notwithstanding. It hadn't taken long to identify the ship as Hellcat, his cousin's favorite and much beloved vessel. So an attempt to take over the ship would be fruitless. There was no way he was going to handle this ship. He could still remember the day when the ship growers had called to say that his cousin's newest vessel had better be thrown back so they could start again. She was wild, arrogant, utterly untrainable. That had been enough for Zab. Even among the other families, who were notoriously stingy with their praise, he was known as the most brilliant ship trainer on the planet, and he couldn't resist a challenge. 9-year-old Tizzy Ann had been present with his father on the orbital training center. Zab had entered the ship, the powerful grappler beams had been released, and the ship had gone herring off in the general direction of Galactic Center. No one had ever expected to see Zab again. But 2 weeks later, ship and man had come limping home, and nothing could be more docile than Hellcat's demeanor when under the command of her conqueror. She was a one-man ship.
"Rather the way Baby is with me," Tack thought defensively.
The point was, she couldn't be controlled by mere psi power alone. Still, she was a military vessel, which meant there were actual control consoles built into her hull so that if she should be badly injured, the crew might be able to nurse her home. But if he did attempt to take the ship using the consoles, she would merely disregard his orders and yell for Zab. And though he could handle Zab in a one-on-one mental confrontation, there were 19 other Takesians on this ship. So what to do? Benafsaj was clearly in command, and if she were to give the order to return Tachyon and the prisoners to Earth, he rolled off the bed and went in search of his kibber. She was on the bridge, glaring at Undami, while Sedger frowned down at a readout that Hellcat had obligingly projected onto the floor. The younger man was squirming.
"Would you be so kind as to explain to me why you administered an unknown substance to a prisoner?"
"It was Rabdan who did it,"
Undami said sulkily.
"Then you are both lackwits, him for doing it, and you for permitting it. Now we have an alien creature of unknown abilities loose in the ship."
"He's moving again," snapped Sedger. "He's on level 5. No, back to 2. Now he's in your cabin."
Benafsaj's mouth twisted in disapproval.
I don't know why everyone's so upset. Hellcat can tell us where he is.
Because he moves through walls and floors, and by the time we reach a place, he's moved again.
The old woman explained with careful patience, as if speaking to a retarded child. Tack stepped forward, trying to avoid drawing the attention of the threesome by the main port, gripped the back of an acceleration chair, and sent out a tiny thread. He had a gift for insinuating himself past shields, but Banafsaj had had more than 2,000 years to perfect hers. His mouth was dry, and he could feel the pulse hammering in his throat as he slipped past the first barrier. Second level. Trickier here. Traps built for the unwary to throw the infiltrator into never-ending mental loops until Banafsaj saw fit to release them. He chipped one of the shields and quickly wove a ward to cover his error. It sat like a dancing snowflake in the midst of his kibber's mind, smoothing over the ragged edge he had left. Past one more. How many levels did the old she-devil have?
Bring!
He never even saw the blow coming. He tripped an alarm. A white-hot sheet rose up like a wave of fire and crashed down. He felt like every synapse in his brain had been simultaneously fired, and his mind seemed to be rattling about in his skull like a rotting walnut in its shell. He realized he was sliding backward across the floor on his butt, his fingers scrabbling at Hellcat's pearly floor. He hit the wall, and the air went out of him in a rush. Banafsaj stared at him, amusement and irritation flicking across her face. He could feel the blood rushing into his thin cheeks.
I had my shields up,
he announced throbbingly and irrationally. He was feeling terribly abused.
Mind control me, you silly boy. And you can't build a shield I can't break. I changed your diapers when you were a squalling brat. There's nothing I don't know about you.
She turned away, dismissal written in every line of her fragile body, and humiliation rose up to choke him.
Take him away,
she threw over her shoulder to Sedger.
And this time, lock him in his cabin.
The last command was directed to the ship. Stony-faced, Sedger offered him a hand up and escorted him back to his cabin. He hurried ahead, head down, shoulders hunched, feeling five. The old man left, and Tack helped himself to several liberal pulls from his silver hip flask. The brandy helped to steady his jangled nerves, but did nothing to promote his mental processes. He paced round and round the luxurious cabin, trying to think of a plan, panicking when nothing suggested itself, wondering what was loose in the ship, wondering. He decided to determine precisely which humans were being held on the ship. He touched a familiar female mind, Asta Lenzer, the prima ballerina with the American Ballet Theater. She was thinking about a man who was having a great deal of difficulty performing. As his stocky, sweat-slick body pounded down on hers, struggling for release, she was thinking how ironic it was that a man with his power couldn't get it up. The most feared man in... Embarrassed by his intrusion and feeling like a voyeur, Tack withdrew and searched further. There was nothing that felt like the amiable lunatic who had accosted him outside the clinic, and he hoped that Trips hadn't been deemed useless and disposed of. There was something strange, a mind so heavily blocked as to be almost opaque. He would never have sensed it without a sudden flare of terror, but it was quickly suppressed, and he lost the source. Perhaps this was the intruder. He searched further and found...
Turtle!
He ejected, surprise and worry bringing him bolt upright. He narrowed and refined his probe, constructed a penumbra to give the illusion to any mental eavesdropper that he was sleeping, and made contact. It was harder than he expected. His first brief touch had shown him a turtle that he did not know, and he didn't want to jar the man by suddenly appearing in his head. He began to search for ways to make the man gradually aware of his presence, becoming more depressed with each passing moment. Dark, heavy emotions rolled like sullen, viscous waves through Turtle's mind. Fear, anger, loss, loneliness, and an overwhelming sense of hopelessness and futility. Feeling like an interloper and not wanting Turtle to think he was prying into private matters that did not concern him, he tapped firmly at the man's primitive shields until a spark of surprise and wary interest showed him he had attracted Turtle's attention.
Turtle,
Tacky? Is that you?
Yes.
He sensed distrust and suspicion. It hurt, and he again wondered what had happened to his oldest friend on Earth.
I'm a prisoner, like you.
Oh. One of those other families you're always talking about.
No, my family. Come to see the results of the experiment, and to find me.
Turtle's doubt felt like a hard blade.
What can I do to convince you that I had no part in this?
Maybe you can't.
My friend, you didn't used to be like this.
Yeah.
Bitterness edged the thought. And I didn't used to be on the wrong side of 40, and all alone, and going nowhere except toward death.
Turtle, what is it? What's wrong? Let me help.
Like you and all the rest of your kind helped when you brought the virus to Earth? No thanks. The old pain and guilt returned, stronger than it had been in years. Years during which he had built the clinic, become famous rather than infamous, beloved by many of his children. Years that had dulled the edge of his culpability. They were wide open to each other, and Tack thought he sensed in Turtle a perverse satisfaction at his pain.
How did they capture you?
It wasn't very hard. They must have used mind control, because I just flew right to them.
What were you doing out, anyway?
Tack said irritably, irrationally trying to shift the blame to Turtle.
I was bringing you a fucking bowling ball. I thought maybe you'd want to roll a few games.
What the fuck do you think I was doing?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking,
snapped Tack, his mental tone as surly as Turtle's.
It was a fucking weird bowling ball. I took it off some street kids.
Where is it now?
They took it out of the shell and placed it on a shelf in the room.
Which room? Show me.
Turtle's exasperation was like acid against his mind, but he obliged. And Tack really didn't know why he was being so insistent about the device. Probably just something to divert him from their present predicament.
I'm debating about the feasibility of a breakout, he said after a long pause. Between your teak, my mind control, and the dagger my great-great-niece Tali gave me, I think we might be able to pull it off. I'm glad you did not attempt to free yourself earlier.
I can't.
I beg your pardon?
I said I can't.
The years rolled back, and suddenly it was he, not Turtle, saying those words. He had stood shivering and crying on the steps of Jet Boy's tomb, trying to explain that though he wanted to help, he just couldn't. Turtle had hit him, the Ace's TK power lashing out like a great invisible fist, driving him down the stairs. But he didn't want to hit Turtle. He just wanted to understand.
Why, Turtle? Why can't you?
I don't have my shell.
The great and powerful Turtle could make chopped liver of these pukes, but not me. I'm just plain old Tom. He jerked back, but the rest of the thought came clearly through to Tachyon.
Tom Tudberry.
Fortunately, the name meant nothing to Tachyon, so Turtle's secret identity was to all intents and purposes still intact.
It's all right, he soothed. It probably wouldn't have worked anyway. The plan would depend on us taking them out one by one, and the minute you ripped open the door, Hellcat would scream for Zab, and they'd be all over us. And even if we did succeed, I'd be right back to the original dilemma, how to handle Hellcat.
Who?
The ship. She's sentient.
Then she must be a little startled, because there's some guy floating around inside her.
You saw? What?
You!
Enunciated a voice, filling the word with all the throbbing outrage possible. Tack's eyes flew open, the concentration necessary to maintain so private a telepathic link completely lost. An eerie blue-glowing figure stood in the center of the cabin. Swiftly he rolled off the bed, the blade sliding down his sleeve and into his hand. He dropped into a knife-fighting pose, the blade and his free hand weaving an intricate and confusing pattern before him. From behind the barrier of his mental shields, he put out a telepathic probe and met a powerful mind block.
Oh, do put that away, you dreadful little man. You cannot harm me.
That's not what I'm concerned about. I'm a little more worried about your intentions toward me.
The creature drew itself up, its strange eyes glittering like sparklers in the featureless face.
This is all your fault. I tried to keep that drug-soaked hippie from this outrageous course, but he was intractable, utterly intractable. Father to the Aces indeed. He has a perfectly good father who would never encourage him in this type of juvenescent irresponsibility. The world would have gone on very nicely indeed without your interference. It's not enough that you should subject us to strange and unnatural alien substances. Now you must needs bring your family in on us, a whole tribe of you. Our only hope is that they are as bumbling and ineffectual as you have shown yourself to be. First you lose the virus, then permit its release, help harry and harass your friends and lovers into prison, insane asylums, and... Silence!
Roared Tachyon.
Oh, Blythe, he cried, and the thought acted like water on a fire, extinguishing his blazing anger and leaving behind only a cold, slimy mess of mud and ashes.
Still, his eruption seemed to have had an effect on his visitor. The man's mouth pinched tightly closed, and he was pulling in sharp little breaths through narrowed nostrils. Then, with supreme dignity, he began to sink through the floor. For an instant, Tachyon goggled, but only for an instant. This man could be useful, and he had stupidly driven him away. He prided himself on his astuteness and on his ability to read and handle people. Now was the moment to test out just how real that ability was. He rushed forward.
No, wait, I pray you, good sir, do allow me to apologize for my rudeness and lack of manners.
The apparition paused, only his head and upper torso visible above the floor.
I haven't had the honor of making your acquaintance. I am Dr. Tachyon.
Cosmic Traveler.
You must excuse me. I've been under rather a great deal of stress today. I was unattentive when you arrived, or I would have been aware from the beginning of your puissance.
Traveler simpered. Then an expression of Olympian calm and wisdom swept over his features, and Tachyon realized that he need not even struggle for subtlety. With this man, even the most blatant of flattery would serve.
Will you please stay? My mind is all in a whirl, and I feel certain that even a few moments of conversation with you would help.
Traveler graciously floated back out of the floor and settled onto a chair. As he did so, the lines of his body became firmer and more well-defined. So, he can become substantial, mused Tachyon.
You've seen the other prisoners?
Yes. When that pathetic moron Trips was taken to the cabin, I noticed a tubby little man in blue jeans and t-shirt and a most strikingly beautiful young woman.
The tip of his tongue appeared from between his thin lips, moistened his upper lip, and disappeared.
Where were you?
I was... present, he said cagily. Fortunately, I was able to get free. I shudder to think what might have happened if one of those other bumptious fools had appeared. They have not the slightest concern for my well-being.
He glared at Tachyon, obviously including him in the statement. Tack was rather at sea with all this talk of other persons and drug-soaked hippies. Meadows, perhaps. But at the moment, he was less concerned with the metaphysical problems presented by Cosmic Traveler, and far more interested in his unique abilities.
Traveler, I think with your help we can escape and return to Earth.
Oh?
Suspicion laced the word.
Go back to the cabin where Turtle and the Captain and the woman are being held.
The Captain is no longer there.
Eh?
I'm here.
Oh, yes. Well, whatever. Anyway, go to the cabin and tell them to stand ready. Then lead Zab and his goons to the far end of the ship.
Tachyon cocked his head to the side and contemplated his strange ally.
It would save time if you didn't have to return here to report. Would you be willing to drop your mental block so I could remain in telepathic contact with you?
No. Allow some alien peeping Tom into my head? It's out of the question.
Tachyon stared at him in exasperation.
I'm not particularly interested in what's in your head. I'm interested in...
The door lensed open, and Traveler went, sinking elegantly through the chair and the floor, still in a seated position. Zab, with five of his soldiers, came tumbling into the room. Tack closed his mouth and arranged his face into an expression of innocent interest.
Where is he?
Gritted Zab. Tack pointed a finger downward. He went that way. Things were becoming increasingly confusing,
First, the hippie had disappeared. Then the blue glowing apparition had vanished, and the Takesians had pelted off in hot, if somewhat disorganized, pursuit. Then Tachyon had contacted him, and now he had broken off abruptly in the midst of their telepathic conversation. Tom kept trying to regain the contact with his friend, even going so far as to murmur, "Tack?" several times under his breath. He looked up, met Asta's wary look, and ran a self-conscious hand through his hair. I was trying to get in touch with Tack.
Right.
And the fact that she clearly thought he was a nut did nothing to bolster his already sagging spirits. If the turtle were here, she wouldn't be looking at him like that, he thought, torn between resentment and weariness. She would be scrabbling for safety atop his shell while he burst from the cabin, scattering Takesians like ninepins, rescued Tack, and flew them triumphantly home. Or rather, forced the Takesians to fly them home. There wasn't room in the shell for passengers, nor did he know how tightly sealed it was. He'd look like a real dork if they all suffocated. He jammed a fist into his thigh, cutting off the tantalizing but pointless thoughts. He wasn't Turtle. He was just Tom Tudbury, the New Jersey boy who in 30 years had managed to move 2 blocks. He closed his eyes and watched the dark, ghostly images of ships passing down the kill, running lights reflected in the dark, unseen waters. And he realized that he was finally about to go on a voyage, though not one of his own choosing. A squeak from Asta brought his head up. The creature was back.
"I am Cosmic Traveler,"
he announced, and then paused as if awaiting a fanfare. Asta and Tom stared at him, fascinated.
"That ridiculous little man has sent me here to ascertain the whereabouts of our captors, and to inform you that he is concocting some, no doubt utterly unworkable and highly dangerous, escape plan."
Asta wriggled forward on the bed, rising silkily onto her knees.
"You can move at will through the ship," she whispered. "Can you also return to Earth?"
"Yes."
She stretched out her arms, the bones of her clavicle etched beneath the white skin.
"Would you be willing to take me with you?"
she purred. Tom wanted to point out to her that first, what made her think the man was telling her the truth, and second, even if he could withstand the cold and vacuum of space, how was he going to take her? She arched her swan-like neck and lifted her hair with her hands. The gestures forced her small, upright bosoms against the leotard, the nipples hard knobs beneath the thin material.
"I can be very generous to people who help me, and my employer might be able to make an interesting offer to a man of your unique abilities."
The total incongruity of the situation left Tom breathless. He wondered if this woman was really going to shuck it and screw with this stranger right before his wandering eyes. Surely the man would realize that more pressing matters were facing them. But Cosmic Traveler was going for it in a big way. Asta's gyrations had set him to panting, and his fingers were working spasmodically at his sides. He shot a nervous glance over his shoulder toward the door, and Tom saw lust and fear battling it out on his smooth blue face. Lust won. With a breathy,
"I agree,"
that was half groan and half words, he tottered to the edge of the bed. Asta was already stripping out of her blue jeans. Beneath them she wore pale pink tights. They and the leotard were quickly removed, and she held out her arms. Traveler collapsed with a moan onto her thin white body, and they began frenzied foreplay. Tom, embarrassed yet fascinated, noticed, with that strange attention to detail that seems to arise whenever one is in an acutely uncomfortable position, that her feet were very ugly. The toes were covered with sores and calluses, and one big toe was bruised black from the constant pounding of the toe shoe. 10 minutes later they were still at it, Asta, with increasing irritation, saying, "Come on! Come on!" Harsh, grunting sounds periodically erupted from Traveler as his blue ass pumped vigorously, and with increasing desperation, up and down, up and down. The ring of a boot heel pulled a gasp from Asta, followed by a wild shriek as Traveler sank through her prone body and vanished into the depths of the bed. Tom, too, almost lost it, and he rushed to the bed to ascertain if Asta was still alive. She was lying deathly still, and he reached out and touched one bare shoulder. She shrieked again, and Tom, startled by the outburst, lost his balance and pitched headfirst onto the bed. The Takesian goggled at the bed, then yelled,
"Captain, he was—"
The closing of the door cut off the rest of his words. Cosmic Traveler returned.
"Well, I sincerely hope you don't have to serve as a sex toy for Takesians. You're singularly lacking in the most rudimentary erotic skills."
"Me?"
yelped Asta, shoving Tom away.
"You're the one who couldn't get it—"
"And what are you sniggering at, you tubby little man?"
roared Traveler. Tom hadn't sniggered, not really, but the ludicrousness of the situation had drawn a sound from him.
"Do you know what they have planned for you?"
Traveler continued.
"Vivisection! Do you know what that means? I can't imagine why they seized you. You must be the most paltry of aces, shaking like a bowl of jello and sniveling like a reluctant virgin."
He shot a smoldering and resentful glance toward Asta, who threw him a bird. Tom exploded.
"Would you just get the fuck out of here? Fuck off! You think you're so fucking smart? But you're stuck too, just like the rest of us. You can't get off this ship. If you could, you would have. Now get out! Get out!"
Tom charged at him, waving his arms wildly about like a man shooing chickens. Traveler went, his features looking decidedly curdled.
"Where the hell have you been?"
Tachyon halted his nervous perambulations.
"How long does it take to scout out ship?"
Traveler, halfway through the cabin wall, began to withdraw. Tachyon rushed forward.
"No, please, wait. I'm sorry. The stress, huh? What did you find out?"
"Our captors are charging about the ship in pursuit of me. Though I can't imagine how they are tracking me. They'll no doubt be here soon."
"And my giver, the old woman with the jewels in her hair,"
he explained at Traveler's blank look.
"I haven't a notion."
Tak held his tongue, deciding that Banaf Saj's whereabouts were perhaps not all that important.
"All right, never mind. We'll try it. To the left of the cabin doors, there is a small protuberance on the wall. That is an override panel for the doors. Open mine, and then we'll—"
"No."
"I beg your—"
he began politely, then stopped and rumbled.
"What?"
"You heard me. I said no. I have not the slightest faith in your ability to successfully execute this escape plan, and I will not be a party to it. Besides, as I stand substantial and helpless outside your door, those thugs will come upon me and harm me."
"It will only take an instant."
Traveler folded his arms across his chest and stared majestically at the far wall.
"No."
"Please?"
"No."
Tachyon folded his hands at his breast.
"Please, please, please?"
"No."
"You whining, groveling coward!"
bellowed Tak.
"You're endangering all of us! You're the only one!"
But Traveler was leaving. Tachyon leapt for a wall niche, pulled down a beautiful membrane vase, and launched it at the rapidly departing ace. It passed through him, smashed into the wall, and Traveler gave him a look of withering contempt and loathing. The entire incident left Tak shaking, partly with anger, partly with despair over his violent reaction. He untied his lace cravat and yanked open his collar, grasping for air. He had tried so hard over the years to put such responses behind him, to deal gently and kindly with all people, and he had lost it all. He was behaving like... He paused, searching for some appropriately disgusting comparison. Like Zab. This brief indulgence in self-castigation felt good, but it didn't remove the primary problem. They were up a creek without the proverbial paddle. "And this too is my fault," thought Tak, without pausing to consider whether any amount of bribery or cajoling might have moved the recalcitrant ace. His hour was almost gone, raging against the vagaries of an unkind and uncaring universe that had left him trapped within the body of a man he considered little better than a vegetable. He wandered through the Takesian ship, dodging increasingly hysterical search parties. But this could not last. If he delayed, he would revert to that moron Meadows, and the aliens might harm him. And however much Traveler might despise his host body, he realized that without Mark, there was no life. He had noticed that doorways left faint lines on the walls like the fossilized imprint of ancient flower petals, Some opened automatically, others seemed to require a telepathic command, and still others used the access panels that Tachyon had described. He went in search of one that would not open automatically, one that seemed firmly and soundly locked from the outside. Mark returned to himself slowly and blinked again because it was dark. His hands roamed fitfully over his face and head until he had fully assured himself of his consciousness. But it was still dark. He shuffled forward and ran his long nose firmly into a wall. Holding his bumped nose with one hand, he stared out into the Stygian darkness. Slowly he stretched out his arms, exploring the dimensions of his prison. It was small, closet size, coffin-sized. That thought was depressing, so he shook it off, and tried, through the hazy filter of traveler's memories, to piece together what had happened.
Aliens, man. Oh, bummer.
And Tachyon, a prisoner? Yes, that felt right. He had been angry. Traveler had done, or failed to do, something. Mark sighed and scrubbed at his face with his hands. Yeah, that sounded about right where Traveler was concerned. For a moment he stood in morose contemplation of his alternate persona's social and emotional shortcomings. He wondered what time it was. Sprout might be home from kindergarten by now. He could trust Susan to keep an eye on her for as long as the pumpkin was open, but once the head shop closed, who would watch her? Surely Susan wouldn't just leave her alone if Mark hadn't returned. He tried to pace his tiny prison, but kept misjudging in the inky blackness and slamming into the walls.
Oh, I gotta get out of here and help Dr. Tachyon. He'll know what to do.
He began fumbling around in his leather pouch and emerged with a vial. He held it up before his eyes and peered, but to no avail. It was too dark to see the glass, much less the color of the powder it contained.
Oh, bummer, man. If I get Flash, he can burn down this door, but Starshine can't work in the dark. And Moonchild...
He poked at the unyielding wall.
I don't know if she could bust this or not.
He returned the vial to the pouch and fished out another one, and dithered, and returned it and tried another, and finally pulled out two. His head wove back and forth between the bottles like a puzzled stork. He put them away and clutched his head.
I gotta do something. I'm an ace, man. People are depending on me. This is like a test, and I gotta prove I'm worthy.
He went back to his fruitless pawing through the pouch. He imagined he could feel the ship moving, hurtling them out beyond the orbit of Neptune, carrying him away from Sprout. His beautiful golden-haired daughter, who would never be mentally more than 4 years old. His Alice in Wonderland darling who needed him. And he needed to be needed. His fingers closed convulsively about a vial. He yanked it out, muttering,
"Oh, fuck it."
Unstopped the bottle and tossed back the contents. Later he might know if his choice had been an appropriate one. Tali had brought him a meal, delicate meat and fruit-filled crepes that had been his favorite back home. The first mouthful choked him, and he tossed the rest down the toilet. His restless pacings had accomplished nothing except to give him a cramp in his left calf, so he seized a brush from the dressing table in the lavatory and tried to soothe himself by brushing his hair. The rasp of the bristles over his scalp felt good, and some of the tension eased from his shoulders. Then Hellcat gave a tiny shudder, and ringing through his mind came a loud, aggrieved, "Ow!" Obviously the ship did not believe in suffering in silence. Traveler, he wondered. Had that puling coward finally decided to do something? Or could it be Turtle, overcoming his psychological block, ripping through the door, squashing Zab into jelly? Hellcat was making such a sigh racket that he didn't think anyone would notice a non-shielded communication with Turtle. The probe lanced out.
Oh, shit!
Sorry, it didn't mean to startle you. There was no sense of danger in Turtle's mind, and Tack sighed. I take it you are not in the process of rescuing us.
I can't,
Turtle sullenly replied.
I told you that.
Tom, he said gently, and remembered only when he heard Turtle's gasp that he wasn't supposed to have revealed his knowledge of the man's secret identity. He plunged on.
Couldn't you just try? I'm sure if you tried, you could...
I can't! How many times do I have to tell you? I can't. And I seem to remember a booze-soaked derelict who kept whining about not being able to do it, and then felt hurt when I wasn't very understanding. Well, the shoe's on the other foot, Tacky. You be understanding.
The slap hurt. He was fully aware of the debt he owed to Turtle, but he didn't like to have his nose rubbed in his past sins. They were just that, past.
The virus is encoded in your very cells.
I know that. How can I ever forget it? It's ruined my fucking life. You and Jet Boy and your goddamn fucking Takesians. Just leave me the fuck alone.
Turtle lacked the mental skills to actually block Tachyon, but he could layer every meaningful thought beneath a thick blanket of anger, making it very difficult to read or send. Tack sucked in several sharp breaths through his nose and reminded himself that this was his oldest friend on Earth. He wondered if he could mind-control Turtle and force him to override his emotional block. But no, the trauma was too deeply buried to reach by such a sledgehammer technique. His father, with his skills, could. Tack hugged himself, rocking back and forth as grief crashed down and bore him under yet again. The sound of screams, crashes, and curses pulled him back. He frowned at the door, then began backing slowly toward the bed as he realized that the sounds were getting closer. A lot closer. Very close. A large gray fist slammed through the door. The spatulate fingers closing on the rough edges of the hole tensed, and a large section of door came ripping loose. Hellcat screeched, and the clear, viscous fluid that served as blood in the sentient ship flowed from the wound. It had soon set into clear, frozen rivulets. Tack stared with dread fascination as section by section the door came down, and lumbering through the uneven hole came a huge, stocky man with glabrous, grayish skin and a bald head with a bulging forehead. Takesians were hanging off him like ornaments on a Christmas tree.
"Mind blast him!"
screamed Zab, slamming a fist into the creature's face. He danced back as the monster plucked a soldier from his back and pitched him toward Zab. One Takesian was not being dislodged even by the creature's great strength. A delicately drawn face set upon a mountainous body, and an expression of dogged ferocity. Derg at Marak Bozab, Zab's pet monster. Revulsion and disgust clawed at the back of Tak's throat. He darted for the ruined doorway, thoughts tumbling wildly.
Not by those hands. Wash in my blood if you must, Zab, but not...
And came up against 3 feet of tempered steel. Slowly he raised his eyes to his cousins.
No, by my hand.
A regretful but predatory smile touched Zab's lips, and he lunged. Tack, skittering backward, lost his footing on the slick floor and went down. It saved his life, for the blade passed only inches above his head. There were more thumpings and crashings as the grotesque gray apparition staggered about the room, dislodging Takesians and clawing futilely at Derg. Banafsaj strode into the room, and Zab lowered his blade. Apparently he was not yet prepared to do out-and-out murder in the presence of an Ajaziyet. Tachyon had never been so glad to see anyone. The old lady let loose with a blast of mental energy that rattled the synapses of everyone in the room, and the creature collapsed like a felled tree. Bruised and battered crew members swarmed over the prone form, binding him with tangler ropes. She pinned her commander with a cold, gray-eyed gaze.
Would you be so good as to explain this tumult?
We found the creature.
Really?
The accents were freezing. Zab sucked at his cheeks, his eyes avoiding his grandam's.
Well, he does seem to have changed form again.
Banafsaj pinned Rabdan with a look.
And may we assume that these vials have something to do with the changes?
A nervous clearing of the throat.
That would seem logical.
So, where are these vials?
I don't know, Kibber. Perhaps he has hidden them somewhere about the ship.
Or perhaps they are only present when he is in his human form.
She eyed the ruined door.
It will take Che Chuer of Al-Matrobi,
she said, referring to the ship by its full pedigree name.
Some time to repair this door.
Post guards!
They can watch both Tijian and this creature, and if the human returns, search him for the vials. Then I trust we will have no more of these ill-bred commotions.
She left with a rustle of brocaded skirts. Tack pulled a handkerchief from his pocket and knelt beside the strange captive.
You are?
He asked as he gently wiped at the blood flowing sluggishly from a sword wound. The man glared up at him, then reluctantly growled,
Aquarius.
How do you do? I am Tizian Brant Tisara Sekalima Sekragnar Sekomion, otherwise known as Dr. Tachyon.
I know.
He stared coldly past Tachyon's left shoulder. He bent in low and whispered,
Do you have any other tricks up your sleeve? Something that might help us take out...
He jerked his chin toward the door and the two rigid guards.
Them?
Aquarius stared rancorously up at him.
I turn into a dolphin, and I swim real fast.
The expression, together with his harsh, angry tone, snapped the thin thread of patience to which Tachyon was still managing to cling.
You will forgive my bluntness, but that does us very little good in our present predicament.
I did not ask to be here, land dweller.
And closing his eyes, Aquarius proceeded to ignore both his fellow prisoner and his captors. Tack unlimbered his hip flask, and while he paced, made substantial inroads on the brandy. 20 minutes later, he noticed that Aquarius's skin was starting to crack and peel.
Are you all right?
No. I must remain moist, or I'm damaged.
Well, why didn't you say so 15 minutes ago?
Aquarius did not answer, and with a snort of aggravation, Tack went trotting into the lavatory and emerged with a glass of water. It didn't make much of an impression on the large form on the floor.
Andami, could you bring me a pitcher or a bucket?
The younger man worried his lower lip between his teeth.
My orders are to stay here.
There are two of you.
You'll try something.
Am I your prince?
Yes, but you'll still try something. And I'm not about to get another reprimand from Zab.
May your line wither,
he gritted, and resumed his harried trotting. The next 30 minutes passed slowly as Tack tried to keep ahead of the rapid drying of the merman's skin. He was pouring a glass of water onto Aquarius's face when suddenly the form wavered and shifted, and there was Captain Trips, coughing and sputtering as the water ran up his nose. Startled by the abrupt transformation, Tack yelled, dropped the glass, and backed off. Trips stared fuzzily about the cabin, then down at his long, lanky form, still festooned with loosely wrapped tangler ropes. He had lost a lot of bulk with Aquarius's departure, and as he rose, the ropes sloughed off him, landing in a tangled heap on the floor around his feet. He removed his glasses and furiously polished them, all the while blinking myopically at Tachyon. The glasses were replaced, and he muttered,
Aw, bummer, man.
And Dami hurried over and quickly riffled through Tripp's pockets. He located the leather pouch with 3 unused vials. Tachyon craned to see, but the brightly colored powders looked singularly innocuous. He itched to get his hands on the substances and do a full analysis. Something that could transmute a human form. And then it hit him. Captain Trips was not a nut. He was an ace.
Captain,
he thrust out his hand.
I owe you an apology.
Me, man?
Yes.
Tack seized the man's limp hand and gave it a hearty shake.
I doubted your story. In fact, I thought you a harmless lunatic. But you are an ace, and a most unusual one at that. These potions.
Help me call my friends.
He stepped in close and lowered his voice.
And I don't suppose you have any more.
He winked, and Tripp stared blankly down at him. Tack sighed. Nice, the man might be, but he wasn't precisely quick on the uptake.
Have you any more secreted about your person? Oh, no, man. It takes a long time to make this stuff. I didn't think I'd be running into aliens. I mean, we beat the swarm, and I didn't expect... I'm real sorry, man. I didn't mean to let you down. No, you couldn't have known, and you did very well.
The captain beamed, and Tack realized, with an overwhelming sense of failure and unworthiness, that this man adored and admired him.
And I'm going to fail him.
Tack crossed to the bed and slumped down, his hands hanging limply between his thighs. Trips, with a sensitivity that the alien hadn't expected, crossed to the other side of the room and left him alone with his miserable thoughts. Sometime later, there was a tentative touch on his shoulder.
"Excuse me, man. I'm sorry to bother you, but I was wondering, like, how much longer until you got us..."
He broke off, and splotches of red suffused his long face.
"See, I got this little girl, and she's probably home from school by now, and the shop will be closing, and I'm afraid Susan won't stay with her, and Sprout's, like, not able to take care of herself."
His long fingers twisted desperately through each other. "I'm sorry. I wish I could do something. I wish I was the leader everyone thinks I am. But I'm not. I'm a fraud. Trips, both among my people and among yours."
The gangling hippie laid an arm across Tack's shoulders, and he leaned his head against the bony support of Trips' shoulder. Trips gave a mournful shake of his head.
"It's not like it is in the comics. In the comics, the good guys always win. They've always, like, got the right power at the right time."
"Unfortunately, life doesn't work that way."
"I'm very tired. Why don't you sleep a while? I'll keep watch."
Tack wanted to ask him against what, but he appreciated the generosity that had sparked the offer and remained quiet. He kicked off his shoes, and Trips tenderly pulled a coverlid up to his chin. He realized muzzily, as sleep claimed him, that he had always used bed and booze as an escape, and today he had used both. The right power at the right time. The thought nagged at the edges of his consciousness. The right power.
"By the ideal!"
He shot bolt upright and kicked away the coverlet.
"Oh, hey, what, man?"
He clutched feverishly at the lapels of Tripp's coat.
"I'm an idiot! An idiot! The answer's been right in front of me and I missed it!" "What?" "The network device." "Huh?"
Andami was regarding him curiously, and Tack quickly dropped to a whisper.
"It's not a bowling ball. It's a singularity shifter."
He hurriedly slipped his feet into his pumps.
"Years ago, before I left home, one of the master traders discussed the possibility of selling my clan a new experimental teleporting device. He demonstrated one and said they might become readily available after a few more tests. This has to be one of those devices, and it's in the main hold."
Trips was completely bewildered by his babblings. He grabbed for the only remark he had understood.
"Yeah, but we're, like, not in the main hold." "How to get us all there?"
Tack's fingers scrabbled in his hair.
"If we're all together, I think I could trigger the device and send us home. The greater the telepathic ability, the greater accuracy, and the size of what can be carried. Now, that was the theory. Of course, the master trader could have just been puffing. Hard to tell with the network. They have the souls of greedy tradesmen." What's a network?" "Another spacefaring race. Actually, a number of spacefaring races. But we don't have to concern ourselves with that. The point is that a singularity shifter is here, on this ship, and it can get us home. Of course, if Turtle had the device, that means the network is present on Earth, and that could mean trouble."
He scrubbed at his face.
"No. One problem at a time. How to get to the hold." "Like, what goes on there?" "Well, obviously it's used for cargo storage, and when there's no cargo, which is most of the time on a ship of this class, it's used for recreation, dances and so forth."
Trips looked dubious.
"I don't suppose we can invite everybody to a dance."
Tack laughed.
"Huh. No."
His expression went flat. "But we can invite them to a duel."
"Huh? Hush a moment. I must think on this."
And he finally did what he should have done from the beginning. He thought like a Takesian instead of like an Earthman.
"Got it?"
Trips asked when he again opened his eyes.
"Yes."
He lay back down and probed for a familiar mind.
"Turtle, there's a way out of this."
"Yeah." The mental tone was one of utter defeat and hopelessness.
"The device you had, it can send you home."
"Yeah, but it's..."
"Just shut up and listen. We're all going to be in the cargo bay."
"Why?"
"Would you stop? Because I'm going to get us there. The attention will be on me, and while it is, you must get that device."
"How?"
You know how.
I can't.
Tom, you must. It's our only hope.
It's not possible. The great and powerful turtle could do it, but I'm just...
Thomas Tudbury, the great and powerful turtle.
No. I'm just an ordinary man who's on the wrong side of 40, drinks too much beer, doesn't eat right, and who works at a fucking electronics repair shop. I'm no fucking hero.
You are to me. You gave me back my sanity and probably my life.
That was the turtle.
Tom, the turtle is a conglomeration of iron plates, TV, cameras, lights, and speakers. What makes turtle? Turtle is the man inside. You're the ace, Tom. It's time to come out of the shell.
Terror was coming off the man's mind in powerful waves, battering at Tack's shields, making him doubt his own plan.
I can't. Leave me alone.
No. I'm going through with this, and you're going to have to come up to scratch, because if you don't, I will have died for nothing.
Died? What do you...
He broke the telepathic link, wondering if he might have put too much pressure on Turtle's fragile emotions. Too late to worry about it now.
Gibber?
What, boy? We find your tone to be less than pleasing, Ajayazet Banafsaj.
She moderated her tone, adding a former overlay of respect, if not for him, at least for his position.
What is it you wish, Clan Head?
Summon the crew. There is a ceremony of adoption to be observed.
What trick are you up to?
Wait and see, or deny me and be forever curious, he said impudently.
Her laughter glittered in his mind.
A challenge. Very well, my little prince. We will see just what it is you are up to.
They had all gathered in the bay. Tom looked about and let out an anguished cry.
My shell!
Zab's lips skinned back in a harsh smile.
We jettisoned it. It was taking up far too much room.
Thak paid little attention to Turtle's distress. His eyes roved quickly about the room, ascertaining that the singularity shifter was still in its place.
It had infrared and zoom lenses, and tuck-and-roll upholstery and...
Zab laughed.
You puke!
Zab stepped forward, fist upraised.
Zab Brant Sabina Sek Shaza Sek Risala, touch my stirps, and I will not give you the courtesy of facing me. I will kill you like a cur in the street.
Zab froze and turned slowly to face his small cousin.
What farce is this?
As a breeding member of the House of Ilkasam, I exercise my right to add by blood and bone to my line.
You would embrace these humans?
Asked Banafsaj.
I would.
She raked them with an imperious glance.
They will, I think, add little to your consequence.
Tack stepped between Trips and Turtle and gripped them by their wrists.
I would rather have them bound and bonded to me than many who can make a greater claim to that right.
His eyes slid to Zab.
Very well, it is your right.
The old woman settled herself on a stool that Hellcat obligingly extruded for her.
Do you agree to this adoption, understanding the duties and obligations of those so honored?
Three pairs of eyes stared at Tack, and he nodded slightly.
We do,
Asta said firmly when the two men continued to stand and dither.
Know then that you and all your heirs and assigns are forever bound to the House of Ilkazam, line of Sonari, through its son Tizian. In all matters be great, and bring glory and service to this house.
Are we like Takesians now, man?
Asked Trips in a penetrating whisper.
The ritual is to bind the Sibline to a house. You would not be permitted to mate with any member of the Mentat class, but you are deserving of our aid and protection.
So we're serfs, Tom rasped.
No, more like equerries. Mere servants are never formally adopted.
He turned on his heel and pinned Zab with a hard glance.
But by my fathers, you, cousin, have given me insult and shown both contempt and abuse toward my stirps, and I will have satisfaction.
Before Zab could move, Banafsaj spoke up.
You need not accept this challenge. Courtesy does not apply retroactively to the Psi-blind.
The commander swept her a bow.
But, Ajayazet, it will give me the greatest pleasure to meet my beloved cousin. Rabdan, you will act for me?
Yes, Commander.
And Sedger, you will act for me?
Tachyon asked. The old man managed a nod. The two men moved quickly to an arms locker, and Tak joined his friends. As he kicked off his shoes, stripped out of his coat and brocaded waistcoat, and began tucking up his ruffles, he said quietly,
Stay well together. Tom, you know what you must do, but for God's sake, act quickly.
He ignored the human's frantic headshakings.
Fortunately, the small sword gives the advantage to the defense, but I will be hard-pressed to hold off Zab. The attention of my family will be focused on me. No one should notice your actions, and once you have the device, I will send you home.
What about you? Muttered Tom. Tachyon shrugged.
I stay here. It is, after all, a matter of honor. I won't run.
I hate fucking heroes.
Has someone something with which to tie back my hair?
Asta dropped to one knee and rummaged about in her capacious dance bag. Pulling out a toe shoe, she tore the pink ribbon from the shoe and held it out to the Tagesian. It clashed horribly with his metallic red curls.
Sir,
Sedger said softly. He was holding out a chainmail sleeve, which covered the sword arm up to the elbow, and a beautifully etched and hammered sword. The hilt was inlaid with semi-precious stones, and the filigree work on the basket was so fine that it looked like lace.
Don't look so depressed, old friend.
How can I not? You're no match for him.
Unkind of you to say so, especially when you trained me.
And him. And I say again, you are no match for him.
It is necessary.
His tone indicated that the subject was closed, and he stared autocratically over the old retainer's head while the armor was strapped to his right forearm. Asta giggled hysterically when a resin box was brought over, and Tak carefully coated the soles of his stockinged feet. She clapped her hands over her mouth and subsided. Tak, moving to the center of the room, hefted his rapier several times to accustom himself to its weight and to remind his muscles of old skills long unused. He didn't blame Asta for tittering. To modern humans, this archaic ritual fought with archaic weapons must seem strange, especially in a spacefaring race. But there were sound reasons for the Tagesian devotion to bladed weapons. They had atomic and laser weapons, but for hand-to-hand combat inside the skin of one of the living ships, a weapon that did not exceed the reach of the arm was better. An indiscriminate firing of projectile or coherent light weapon could badly damage a ship, and then it wouldn't much matter if the crew had won or not. There was also the Tagesian love of drama. Virtually any fool could learn to fire a gun. It took real skill to be a swordsman. Zab joined him and said in an undertone,
I have been looking forward to this moment for years.
Then I am delighted to be able to oblige you. It doesn't do to be denied so fondly a wished-for occurrence.
Their swords flashed in a brief salute, engaged with a scrape of steel on steel. Tom was no expert on the niceties of fencing, but he could see that this fight bore little resemblance to the brief glimpses of Olympic fencing he had seen on television. The speed was the same, but there was a deadly intensity about the two men as they fought for their lives. Their eyes were locked on each other, and the shifting of their stockinged feet on the floor of the ship made a soft whispering counterpoint to Tak's gasping breaths. His companions were staring at him, Trips with the look of a desperate basset hound, Asta the tip of her tongue just moistening her lips. Tom slowly turned his head and stared at the black ball where it rested on the shelf only feet away. He reached out, struggling so hard that sweat popped out along his forehead and upper lip, and he found a great yawning emptiness. The device didn't even quiver. Trips moaned, and Tom looked back just in time to see the foible of Zab's blade glance across Tak's upper arm. A trail of red followed its path. Tak withdrew with more haste than grace and barely parried a vicious thrust from his cousin. Trips, his watery blue eyes wild behind the thick lenses of his glasses, flung himself forward and landed on Zab's shoulders. With a snarl, the Tagesian reached back and flipped the hippie neatly across the room. Trips lay stunned on the luminous deck, gasping like a fish. Several of Zab's guards dragged him back and dumped him on the floor between the other humans.
"I can't. I just can't,"
Tom whispered frenziedly. "You fucking wimp," Asta enunciated clearly, and turned her back on him, returning her attention to the duel that had begun again. Tak blinked hard, trying to clear the stinging sweat from his eyes. Each breath burned, and tiny tongues of flame seemed to be licking at the muscles of his sword arm.
"Watch, watch,"
he urged himself, blade coming up so fast it was just a blur. He parried with a sharp beat, the force of the blow vibrating down his already overtaxed muscles. A riposte, but not with the blade, with his mind. A section of shield flowed, wavered. He thrust, hit, and Zab staggered under the mental attack. He charged back. Kora Kor. Zab's breath hot on his face, the blades hopelessly tangled between them. Tak strained, trying to throw Zab back, but he was overmatched, the mind a gray, implacable wall. No, not quite. Tak jerked his body to one side, avoiding a vicious knee to the groin, leaped back, and kicked Zab's back leg out from under him. Envelopment, but his cousin was too fast for him. Zab parried and followed with a swift riposte and a mind blast. It slid off Tak's shields. His vision seemed to be blurring around the edges. No stamina. Wind almost gone. Turtle! He tried a wild, desperate thrust in tierce. Zab tapped it aside almost contemptuously. He was a demon. That smile, still in place, and only a few beads of sweat mingled in the curly sideburns. His lashes dropped, hooding his eyes, and he pressed the attack. Nausea lay thick on his tongue as Tak realized that Zab had only been toying with him before.
"Would you like to call it quits, beloved cousin?" whispered his tormentor. "Of course you would, but it's not to be. As promised, I'm going to kill you."
No breath to answer the taunt, he just shook his head, more to clear the sweat than to deny the statement. He lanced out with a desperate mental blow that was turned by Zab's shields, and then, like a miracle, he saw an opening. He lunged, blade scraping along Zab's. Zab took his foible in a flashing parry and passed on, his point searching for the heart. Time thrust, lure to the unwary, death! He was sure he was seeing it. The brief flaring of the nostrils, the sardonic half-grin. Steve Bruder, with the same mannerisms as he crushed Tom's hand. "Fuck you." He flung at Zab as the power washed through him, tingling in his extremities. He reached out and... The blade coming swift and true, then miraculously pulled offline. Not much room, but enough. Tachyon brought up his sword, parrying on the fort. A plentitude of targets offered themselves. The heart, the belly, a shoulder cut. Tak caught his lower lip between his teeth, and for one wild, glorious moment considered driving the point deep, deep into that hated body. He lunged, and their eyes met for one eternal, frozen moment. The blade turned in his hand, the hilt taking Zab neatly in the chin with a sound like an axe hitting wood. Zab's sword clattered to the floor, and he pitched forward on his face. There was a gasp like a rising wind from the assembled watchers. For a moment, Tak stared at his sword, then flung it aside and knelt beside his cousin. Gently he rolled him over and cradled the larger man in his arms.
"You see, I couldn't do it,"
he whispered, and he wondered why there were tears pricking at his eyelids.
I know you'd rather I killed you, but I couldn't. And despite our training, death is not preferable to dishonor."
Tom stood, his hands clenched at his sides, and reveled in the waves of excitement and joy that were washing through his body. He had done it. True, he had used enough concentration to shift a bulldozer, and the end result had been only a minute deflection, but it had been enough. Tak would live, indeed had won, because of Tom's action. With a little swagger, he faced the alien device. It flashed through the air, landing with a satisfying smack in Tom's hands.
"Come on, Tacky, time to go,"
he sang out, his round cheeks flushed with excitement. Tak laid Zab gently down and leaped to his friends. Not a single relative made a move. Tom handed over the device with an awkward little bow. Tak returned the salute.
"Well done, Turtle. I knew you could do it."
He looked at Ben Afsaj, made an elegant leg, winked, and ordered them home. It was like being in the center of a vortex of nothingness, icy cold and utter darkness, and for Tachyon the feeling that his mind was being torn into tiny, tattered streamers by the stress of holding all four travelers within the envelope of the singularity shifter.
By the ancestors,
he wailed.
At least let us land on dry land!
Tachyon crumpled, the device rolling from his nerveless fingers. Trips was squatting in a gutter, holding his head in his hands, and muttering over and over,
Oh, wow!
Tom retched a few times as his abused stomach tried to decide just where in space and time it was currently residing. There was a growing commotion, people yelling, windows being flung open, horns blaring as cars rolled to a stop, their occupants gawking at the tableau on the sidewalk. Tom dug the heels of his hands into his eyes, looked down at Tack, and quickly dropped to his knees beside the Tachyon. Blood was pumping sluggishly from the long gash on his arm and was running from his nose, and he was alarmingly white. The alien seemed to be scarcely breathing, and Tom pressed his ear to his friend's chest. The heartbeat fluttered erratically.
Is he gonna be all right, man?
Mumbled Trips.
I don't know.
Tom threw back his head and stared up at a ring of black faces.
Somebody get a doctor!
Shit, man. They just popped in from nowhere.
Teleporting honkies? You think they'd be aces or what?
Doctor, get a doctor,
bawled a burly man. Asta backed slowly away from the circle of spectators, her eyes searching quickly for the black ball. A couple of kids were inspecting the device, and she stepped to them.
I'll give you $5 each for that.
$5? Shit! It'd just be a bowling ball with no holes in it. What good that gonna do you?
Oh, you'd be surprised,
she said softly, and fished her billfold out of her dance bag. The exchange was quickly made, and she tucked away the alien device. The howling of sirens presaged the arrival of the police and an ambulance. Tack was loaded in, and Tom started to climb in with him.
Hey, where's the gizmo?
Asta opened her mouth, blinked several times, and closed it.
Gee, I don't know.
She peered about as if expecting it to materialize from the Harlem landscape.
Maybe somebody in the crowd took it.
Hey, buddy, you want to get your friend to the hospital or not?
Growled one of the ambulance attendants.
Well, look for it,
Tom ordered and climbed in. Asta gave an ironic wave to the departing ambulance.
Oh, I will. And Kian is going to be so pleased with this.
She sauntered away, searching for a subway station to carry her to the waiting arms of her lover and commander. The padlock opened with a grating snap, and Tack pushed open the small side door to the warehouse. Trips and Turtle followed him into the echoing gloom, and Trips muttered something unintelligible at the sight of the ship resting in the center of the vast, empty building. The amber and lavender lights on the points of her spines glimmered faintly in the gloom, and dust spiraled in from all sides as she quietly collected and synthesized the tiny particles into fuel. She was singing one of the many heroic ballads that made up such a large part of ship culture, but cut off when she perceived Tack's entrance. The music was, of course, inaudible to the two humans.
Baby, he telepathed to her. Lordly one, are we going out?
She asked with pathetic eagerness.
No, not tonight. Open, please. There are humans with you. Do they also enter?
Yes. This is Captain Trips and Turtle. They are as brothers to me. Honor them.
Yes, Tizian. I am pleased to have your names.
They cannot hear you. Like most of their kind, they are mind-blind.
Sorrow.
There was the ache of another kind of sorrow in his chest as he led the way to his private salon. Memory. It could be so clear. The day his father had taken him to select this ship. All gone now. He settled back among the cushions on the bed and ordered, Search and contact.
There are lordly ones present?
Yes.
And one of my kin?
Baby asked, again with that pathetic eagerness.
Yes.
Seconds stretched into minutes. Tack lounging at his ease on the bed, Trips perched like a nervous roosting bird on a settee, and Tom bouncing nervously on the balls of his feet. The wall before Tachyon shimmered, and Banafsaj's face appeared. The ship boosted his powerful telepathy, and the link was made.
Is he on?
Gibber,
you're expecting the call?
Of course. I've known you
since I was in diapers. Yes, I know.
You have surprised me, Tizian. I think Earth has had a beneficial effect upon you.
It has taught me many things,
he corrected in a dry tone.
Some more pleasant than others.
He paused and fiddled with the foaming lace beneath his chin.
So, does it continue to be dagger points between us?
No, child. You may stay with your rustic humans. After the defeat you dealt him, Zab has no hope of the scepter. You should have killed him, you know.
Tak just shook his head. Banafsaj frowned down at her hands and straightened her rings.
So we part. It is disappointing that we have no specimens, but the success of the experiment cannot be denied, and it will delight Bakaner to have our data. This effort will be the salvation of the family yet.
Yes,
Tak replied hollowly.
I will send a ship every 10 years or so to check on you. When you are ready to return to us, we will welcome you. Farewell, Tiz.
Farewell,
he whispered.
Well?
Asked Tom. They'll leave us in peace.
Like, I'm really glad you're not gonna leave.
So am I,
he said. But his tone lacked certainty, and he stared mournfully at the glowing wall as if trying to pull back the image of his grandam. A warm, capable hand with its short, stubby fingers closed firmly over his shoulder. A moment later, Trips had gripped his other arm, and he sat silent, basking in the wash of love and affection coming off both the men, driving back his homesickness. He laid a hand over Tom's.
My dearest friends, what an adventure we have had.
Yeah, life is, like, pretty neat, man.
Why didn't you kill him? Tom asked. Tak shifted and stared up into Tom's brown eyes.
Because I would like to believe in the possibility of redemption.
Tom's grip tightened.
Believe it.